Running Buds.
Welcome to the Running Buds podcast. I am your host, Steve McNamee, and my co-host with his new phone is Charlie Lambricks in Utah. Charlie, yeah. Hello.
Yeah, new phone. I'm not sure about it. I just told you, Steve, before we started recording, if this phone can't cut the mustard on recording, then I'm going to go get a new one. I don't rely on my phone for much, but I do rely on it for this podcast. So,
yeah, this is a conversation you'll never hear on the Joe Rogan podcast, by the way. This is this is the low budget Running Buds podcast based in Ohio and in Utah.
That's right. I'm in Utah. You're in Ohio.
Back home. Yeah. Here in Ohio, it is 85 degrees. I just finished, Charlie, my first hot weather run of the year, all sweaty, very hot, very slow. And you, though, you have a run coming up that we're gonna talk about quite a bit here, aren't we?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm doing a marathon tomorrow.
And why? Why are you doing a marathon, Charlie? You just did a marathon.
Yeah. Well, the cop-out answer is I was already signed up for it last year, and this is a deferred entry.
Okay, I remember you saying that. That's okay. But why are you doing this?
Yeah, it doesn't hold up to questioning, though, because it was scheduled the same time of year last year, and I was supposed to be running Boston in the spring of last year, so still, I'm lacking logic in doing this. And I don't know, Steve. I run a lot of races.
You do run a lot of races. That is true.
And I'm 6 weeks, well, 5 weeks and 6 days after Glass City is when I'll be running this. I have run races closer together, marathons, at Racing Effort, and it's gone okay. Those races were in November and December, though, not April and May. Hey, I'm sorry, April and June. So yeah. I don't know. Yeah, we just did one of these episodes, Steve, because the race is tomorrow morning. We're recording this Friday night. And when we did this with Glass City, we both ran big PRs. I had like this fire in my belly. I had this nervousness. We were sitting at your kitchen table. Just you could feel the anxiety in the room of what lay ahead of us, because we had big expectations and big plans out of ourselves. This time around, I woke up yesterday morning like, oh my God, it's Thursday. This is my last night at home before I drive down to this race. I should probably eat some pasta and go to bed early. That's just sort of been the malaise that's been over me.
Yeah. Weeks. Yeah, like now it's a burden, right? Is it a little bit of a burden?
Yes and no. I'm excited for this race. It's one that I've been signed up for 3 consecutive years.
Excited by a burden, Charlie. There's some exciting burden, some things, but
wait, what?
You can be excited by having a burden placed on you. So,
no, I heard you. I just don't understand. Are you just saying that to say it, or is there a burden that you're excited for? I guess Christmas every year you can be excited for, and that's a burden.
Well, that kind of thing. There's things maybe you can get excited about that maybe you wouldn't do if you were given the freedom to not do it. But if you didn't have to do this race, if you weren't signed up a year ago, do you think you would still do this race?
Oh, good question. Yeah. So if I didn't already have this deferred, just, you know, would I have signed up in these course of these 6 weeks?
Yeah.
Well, probably not. No.
Okay.
Okay. Anyway.
But I'm glad a little bit of a gun to your head. It might be just a BB gun, but it's still a little bit of a gun to your head, but all right, well, let's get over. That's the negative part. What's good? What's the positive? What's the fun part you're looking forward to then?
Oh, well, it's a gorgeous course. I'm doing the Utah Valley Marathon. Mm-hmm. It's a point to point. It's one of those classic Utah races where you start up in the mountains in the middle of nowhere. I'm going to be starting just outside of Walsburg, Utah.
And mm-hmm.
I have never heard of Walsburg, Utah, and it's not even in this tiny little town. It's outside of Walsburg, Utah. And then we run down, I guess, the Utah Valley. I know there's a Provo Canyon involved. There's a reservoir, deer something along the way. There's some Bridal Veil Falls, and just looking at the Google images, if you look up Utah Valley Marathon, you'll see it's a stunning course, just absolutely gorgeous. Downhill, it's a net like 1,700 feet drop over the course of the 26.2, which is, I'm sure sounds like a huge drop to you, but there's tremendously more neck-breaking drops here in Utah that I could have. There is some climbing around mile 8 or so, some rolling hills. I've talked to friends that have run it before, and they said that it is downhill, but these rollers will get you. Don't expect this whole thing to be downhill. And when you climb after going downhill for a lot, it can kind of emphasize that effort. So not too concerned about that, because the worst of that is early in the race. But then it's like a very gentle slope downhill into the city of Provo, where the finish line is. So yeah, classic Utah race, just starting in the middle of nowhere up in the mountains. It starts off with its most significant drop is the first 7 miles. We might lose of that 1,700 net drop, we might be losing 1,000 feet over that first seven.
Sounds lovely. It sounds like a postcard. It sounds like you're running through a postcard, Charlie.
Yeah, and finish right in Provo. I'm looking forward to it. Yeah, even though I haven't thought a tremendous amount about this race over the past 6 weeks, because I thought about it absolutely zero before Glass City Marathon, because that was like took up all of my thought and my training and everything. And then after that, that's what it was. To Glass City, there was like this vendetta to go PR. Yeah. The motto going into Glass City was PR or ER. The motto going into Utah Valley is PR or, I mean, let's see what happens. It's going to be warm. Let's be responsible. We don't need to go into the medical tent for this one. So
kind of that, yeah. a moderate amount of bravado.
But like I said, the first 7 miles are downhill, so there's no way, and it's going to be 54 degrees at the start.
Oh, that sounds great.
Starts at 6 a.m., which is nice. The only bad thing is the last bus leaves at 4:15 a.m. Yeah, so it gives and it takes, right? But when you have your first 7 miles, it's mid-50s. We have, like, no humidity here, so that 54 degrees is going to feel ideal. There's, like, no wind also. I already know that after those 7 miles downhill, cool weather, I'm going to be feeling great, and I'm going to be like, oh my gosh, today is my day, just because it's going to be effortless because of the profile of the course. And then we climb a little bit after that, so that's when I'll start to really test my legs and see what might happen tomorrow. But
curious. You know, you've got me very curious here, because I mean, to me, one of the big things, even you've had 6 weeks, but it's the mental wrapping your head around another marathon. Even, I mean, 6 weeks is a long time, but in terms of marathoning, it's kind of soon, you know?
Oh yeah. That's so, a quick turnaround. I've just been consistently running. I think 16 miles I did 2 weeks ago was my longest run of all of this. And I've been running 5 or 6 days a week, nothing real long. There have been some intense efforts, some Strava segments, some workouts, but nothing nearly as consistent and disciplined as leading into Glass City, which I think honestly was the perfect approach. And it wasn't even intentional. I've just had a lot of things going on that were put off before Glass City, and a little bit of travel, as the listeners know, we recorded the last one from your house. So it's really kind of forced things to be less intense. And that's probably the best thing I could have done over this 6 weeks, just to stay consistent, but not push a whole lot. And to be perfectly honest, Steve, my legs at this moment, a little over 14 hours before the race, they feel better than they did at this point before Glass City.
Well, this is what's fascinating is that for Glass City, you had a healthy amount of fear. So I'm curious how this is going to work. I mean, I don't know. Do we do better when we approach races with a healthy amount of fear and, for lack of a better term, respect? Or you seem to have a lot more confidence going into this one. And
confidence in how I feel. I'm probably not even probably. I'm much more fearful of this course though than Glass City.
Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah, Glass City. I knew that course. I had run that marathon course. Well, not that exact marathon course because there was tweaks, but for all intents and purposes, I have run that course and knew those streets. I was very familiar with them. And I know there's, you know, Seth kind of complained about the elevation in Seth DeMore, that is, from prior episode, kind of complained about being more climb than he was comfortable with for a PR effort. But I found it, very flat myself. And there's a ton of turns. But I know that. I know the course, and I knew there was going to be no surprises for me on the Toledo course. I knew that the last 6 miles-ish are on the bike path, and that's when it's really going to suck. But I didn't even need mile markers for that
race. All due respect to Seth. That is a PR course. I'm not giving that thing any credit for elevation change. There's some little bitty hills here and there, which are inclines and declines, but that's a PR course.
And Seth lives in Colorado, which
yeah.
I don't know if you know this or not, Steve, but Utah and Colorado are kind of like rivals. And Utah is definitely the little brother in this rivalry, I'll put in air quotes. Colorado gets like all the attention. They have the probably more renowned ski resorts, or at least more of them. But everybody in Utah is like, we know ours are better. And then like Utah, they're both known for their outdoor activities and hiking and camping. And Colorado is quick to point out that Utah doesn't have any mountain peaks over 14,000 feet.
Oh my gosh. Utah, come on. And why not? Did they just not build them higher, or why not?
Yeah, the ground just didn't push up high enough like it
did. Oh, okay. Okay. So So Utah is like New Zealand to California, or I'm sorry, California, Colorado being Australia.
Yeah, kind of. Okay. So if I was more familiar with Seth, I would give him a lot of flack and being from Colorado and calling Glass City Marathon, you know, anything but a very flat course. But anyway, Utah Valley is not that way. It's a net downhill, like I said, but net downhills, I don't know. A lot of people love them and can do them really fast. And, you know, that intuitively it should be that way. But I've had struggles with them because it's not nearly as downhill as it is the second half as the first half in general. And this is no exception. And when you're going downhill for a majority of the time, and then even if it's flat or even the slight downhill for the last couple miles, those can just be brutal. They can feel like they're uphill, even though they're not, just because you've been, you know, pounding your quads going downhill the previous miles. So okay. I said it's going to be 54 degrees, perfect weather at the start. It's going to be 76 degrees at the finish. So I know it's going to, for lack of a better word, suck even more than the last couple miles of a marathon do, because it's going to be hot and
very true.
My legs are going
to be. That said, you would not want to do the course in reverse.
Oh my God, no. No. No.
Let's count our blessings.
Yes,
the downhill marathons, I'm sure, have their little bitty asterisks when it comes to this is going to be easy, but we never plan a marathon uphill. Well, I should say we never, but they are few and far between, and they are to be avoided.
The data is on the side of downhill marathons.
Yeah, so
there's a reason net downhills are not eligible for, you know, like world record status, even Boston, because it's net downhill by just a couple hundred feet. Yeah. Is not able to have like world record status and whatnot. And everybody from elites to your weekend warrior in general across the board runs faster on downhill courses. So I may just be different, or maybe I just haven't trained exactly the right way or timed it just the right way. But my experience in downhill courses, I hurt far more than I do at the end of a flat race. So while my legs feel better than they do before Glass City, I had a little bit of like a cough and an itch in my lungs. I think I mentioned my son sneezed into my mouth like 2 days before I left for Toledo. I don't have any of that going on. So like,
okay, good.
Internal check of all the things you need to run a marathon that is between my head and my toes, all of that feels better than Toledo. But then I've got that, you know, nagging thing of, well, you've lost a step then. I haven't been training, so, and I've taken all this 6 weeks to, you know, I might have lost the shape. If I did maintain that fitness level, then yeah, I think I have a chance to really do something even better and maybe even shave off those 3 seconds to get under 242 as opposed to 242.02, which but yeah, I'm wearing the shoes, you know, the Saucony Endorphin Pros. Got a lot of bounce in them. I think that's going to be even more helpful on a downhill course. Reading reviews on this race, one of the complaints was that a majority of it is on concrete as opposed to asphalt. But in those shoes, I don't think it'll even matter, right? You know, concrete.
Sure.
A little harder, but like, I feel like I'm in moon shoes. I'm just like bouncing along on a track, no matter the surface, with those Endorphin Pros. So not worried about that. You know, okay. I said this, but I hear how fast I'm talking, and I am definitely doing some nervous pre-race chatter in spite of myself on this podcast.
I know, and this is not alcohol driven. We know this is Charlie just on pure adrenaline, pre-race adrenaline. Even
I didn't even have a cup of coffee this morning because I wanted to ensure I can get to bed at a decent time, since I have to get up at 3:15 in the morning. And I think staying at the hotel that the buses are, that's like the official race hotel, and I did it because it's like in that early in the morning. It's probably only like a 45-minute drive, but you know, I don't want to have that kind of drive in the morning when it's already going to be there 4:15. So my wife, my son, and I are staying at the race hotel tonight, and I still have to set my alarm for 3:15 just to make sure I'm on before that last bus at 4:15.
Okay.
Have you ever set your alarm early?
Not that early, no.
Have you ever been up that
late? I mean, in you know, college days when I had no self-discipline, I'd stay up that late, but I don't normally wake up that early for farting around and racing and running and all that stuff, no.
I have one last thing on the race, and I found this funny. Let's see what you think. You know, I don't know about you, Steve, but I like really pour over the race website, especially like that last day, you know.
Yeah.
I did work today, so I was at work, and you know, I couldn't help but keep going back to the website just to read more, because that'll give me the edge. That'll really knock a lot of time off my race, just knowing
it,
more
about the website. Yeah. So. Knowledge is power.
And one of the things Utah Valley bragged about, and before I say this, I want to give these guys credit. They, at least to this point, have been the most organized race I've ever done. In fact, just the amount of information they have on their website and the amount of information they email and how organized they have it, it's really impressive. And it gives me confidence that they've got their ducks in a row. And all I have to worry about is the running of this. In fact, I was so impressed, I actually forwarded the email that I got from them 2 weeks ago to Clint and Todd and other race directors in my life, just because I was like, take this for what it's worth, but as somebody running the race, this is what you love to see, just the amount of information they had and the way they had it laid out. So very well organized race. But one thing that did make me laugh on their website is they're kind of bragging about their course. They say it's beautiful. They say it's a fast, gentle downhill. And then they say there's no turns after 7 miles. Which is cool. Which, and then
that they is great.
Why that's good, because there's no momentum sapping 90 degree turns. Agreed. And then they threw this on at the very end, which I found very unnecessary. Lack of turns make it less likely to run off course. And I was like, I don't think you should say that. I mean, it's true, but I wasn't even thinking about that. And the fact that you're bringing it up, I mean, like, did something happen? Why are you even talking about running off course?
That is a little odd. I mean, congratulations on having no turns. And yeah, that's an odd little qualifier for a race. But, well, Charlie, I wish you luck.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. And the last thing I have, and this doesn't regard to the race, and I want to make sure we cover this before we record post-race at some point, is my buddy Ryan, who sent that sappy email about how we should talk about ultras more, and ultras are great. He ran 100 miles. He had a redemption race. Bryce Canyon 100 miler. He had to drop out of last year. This whole thing is over 7,000 feet of elevation, which is really high. There's not a lot of oxygen at 7,000 feet. That's brutal alone. And then he climbed, did a total of like 15,000 of climbing during the 100 miles. Very impressive. It was also warm. This is southern Utah, so it was like in the 80s during the day and kind of cold at night. So just a really tough race, and he pulled it off. He got his 100 miles in. He's done 100 before, but you know how it is. Whenever you drop from a race, it's like this cloud hanging over you. So I'm glad he was able to get that weight off his shoulders and finish this really tough race.
And a kudos for that. So, all right, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, Charlie, you will finish your race.
Yes, I will.
Ugh. All right.
It's going to be no time for the listeners, but yeah, I've got a lot of pain in my next couple hours.
All right. Pause time, and we'll pick up where we left off.
Till next time.
All right. Running
buds. And we are back, and it's the day after the Utah Valley Marathon, and I'd like to start off by saying, ow, 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 ouchie, ouchie, ow, ow, ow.
Just like that, huh?
Oh, yeah, man. Stairs are rough today.
Really? It's rougher than a normal marathon?
Yeah, well, I've only got the 6 weeks separating this and Toledo. And what's interesting, Glass City Marathon, my legs hurt, of course. You know, it was a PR marathon. Did I mention it's a PR marathon? I got a PR in the marathon at Glass.
Yeah, I saw your t-shirt. Yeah.
Well, anyway, but like everything hurt too. Like I was pretty nauseous post-race and couldn't eat, couldn't like even sit still and feel right. I was just like off after that effort. And this experience, I don't have that at all. I could eat just fine immediately after the race. I mean, I was, you know, knackered, as they say, post-race, but my legs are trashed, much worse than even Toledo. And I think it is because of the, I don't know, 1,700 feet of net drop over the course of the 26 miles.
Fascinating.
But let's get to it. My A goal was to PR. My B goal was probably to break 2:45, my PR being a 2:42. And then my C goal, which is the one I accomplished, was just to not blow up, to go in with that A and B goal and hold on to it as long as possible, and then not to just have that total hit the wall, want to die, barely shuffling along to the finish line. And I think I accomplished that. When I got to mile 21.2, I had, what is it? I could do the math at the time. I could do the math that I knew that I could get under 2:45 if I maintained sub 6:30s, which is like a 2:50 overall pace. And yeah, I just was not quite able to do that.
Mile six, when you're doing compensatory math during a marathon, sometimes that's a bad sign. Yeah, even with 5 miles to go.
Well, with 6 miles left to go, I could do the math, and I knew it was 39 minutes. So when I got to that mile 20, and then I got to like 20.25, knowing that that would be, you know, 6 miles, because of course a marathon is 26.2 miles and a little bit of buffer for missed tangents. Anyway, I had almost like exactly 39 minutes. And 6.5 times 6 is 39. So I was like, okay, all I have to do is keep doing sub 6:30s and I'll get in. And man, this is boring. I'm sorry. I'll wrap this up quick. And then I ran like a 6:18 that next mile. And I was like, yes, I'm going to break 2:45. Look at me go. So I got to 5 with like a little bit of cushion, right? And, with 5 miles left to go. And then have you ever had this, Steve? I didn't hit the wall. You've of course hit the wall where like, you just feel like death, right?
Yeah.
Like,
oh yeah.
It's almost impossible to go forward. I didn't have that. I was extremely tired. My legs were killing me. But I still had like the oomph, like I was trying to keep going fast. I just could not. Just looking at your watch, you're like, how am I going slower?
But I saw your Swiss. Like
competing, right? And yeah, at least competing to finish as fast as I possibly could, not just trying to get to the finish line, but trying to get there as quick as I could. So I kept that going, but I just could not keep the pace.
Yeah, well, I saw your splits, and that was pretty fascinating, because I had a conversation before Glass City with a friend that was doing his first marathon. And I think, I don't know. He basically said, well, this pace that we were kind of jogging at this, I feel like I could do this even if things go bad. And I think I said, no, you can't do this. If things go bad, you'd be surprised how slow you actually go when things go bad. And when I asked him after the marathon, he said, yes, I see what you mean, because you do die, just completely turn into sometimes say you're no longer making decisions are being made for you by your legs. And so when you only lost like a minute a mile, that was kind of a crazy way of I don't want to say crashing, but you know what I mean, you lost that oomph, like you said. It's fascinating. Yeah,
there could be a word for that, because I didn't crash. I didn't hit the wall. I was stalling, though. You know, it was
sputtering.
At like a warplane, just like landing while on fire. I was like dead, and yeah. I like kind of didn't do a crash landing, but it was a rough landing.
It's like you're always stuck in second gear.
Yes. Yeah. That's exactly what it was. It was hot by the end. It felt pretty warm. It was at least over 70. I don't know exactly the temperature. But it's, you know, it's so dry out here that it's like not nearly as unbearable as that would feel in Ohio or most other places.
Yeah. You really have me trying to think if that's ever happened to me. It's definitely never happened to me in a marathon, but I think, you know, and you start getting into shorter races, I think it's easier for that to happen. I think it's probably happened to a lot of us, because you have that racing edge that, you know, you can get your engine all the way up to red line. And on a shorter race, when you just lose that edge, physically you're still fine and you can still go, but you know, you're now sputtering, like you say. But in a marathon, I've never done anything other than just hit the wall completely where I'm done. I'm toast. I'm a zombie. Yeah.
I think every 5K, that third mile, you never feel great on. And I don't I don't know, maybe there's people out there that can do that third mile faster than mile one or mile two, but pretty much every 5K is like that. I just want to go faster. It's just,
yeah,
do it.
That is kind of fun. 5Ks especially is entertaining, that thought in your mind that, you know, I don't really need this that bad. Like, this hurts so bad. I don't really need to do this today. And then you like, no, you only have a few more minutes. Just keep doing it. And then you get right back on the track. But I think every 5K, there's a moment where I'm just kind of, I don't really need to be doing this. Am I? Or do I? You know, I mean, is this necessary?
Yeah, I never had
your
thought or feeling, and I'd say this is the wall when you're like, I'm never doing this again. Why do I do these? I never had that. Yeah. Never had that thought, but I was definitely in the house of pain for that last five, definitely. So that stinks. I do want to give a shout out before this is over. I have a friend named Curtis. He listens to the show. He's emailed a few times. He was out on his bike supporting all of his friends and fellow runners, and he helped me out big time. He got on the bike. He was able to give me some water occasionally here and there that was ice cold, which was a blessing, as you can imagine.
Yeah.
Nice things in low humidity places is that cold water is like a miracle worker, because you know, it doesn't help that much when it's hot and humid, but when it's just hot, it really helps significantly. So he was able to provide that, and he was right there at the finish along in the bike, yelling at me, encouraging me. So he helped me finish a little bit faster than I think I would have otherwise. And it was just great to see him out there and have that support. Former guest of the show, listener Janelle, she was out there. We did a couple miles together, which was great. She did eventually drop, which I don't know if she'll admit this, but I think she was kind of expecting that. She had COVID earlier in May, so that hit her pretty hard. So I think her expectations were quite tempered for this, and she made it to halfway point and decided to drop. But we did a couple miles together, which was cool. And the race itself, it was just like, Steve, it was like running in a postcard. Absolutely stunning. Just a gorgeous, gorgeous course here in Utah we have. So Utah Valley, I'd recommend the running it, because it's beautiful. Really super, super well organized too. I talked about how great everything was put together leading up to it. Morning of the race, there was kind of a snafu. As you know, there's not a lot of point-to-point races in your neck of the woods, right, Steve?
Not many. There's a few, but there's a few and far between.
It's a big ordeal. It's a lot more planning on the organizer's part. It's a lot more challenges that you have to overcome from the organization standpoint, as opposed to a loop where the start and finish are the same spot. Mostly just getting people on buses, getting them to the start line. And then also the thing that's not always thought about is getting the buses out of the way. Because this was such a rural road up in the mountains that we started at, that the buses had to go like past, drop everyone off, go down the road. I don't know where they were able to turn around, but they were not able to turn around where the start line was, come back through. And this is the start line, right? So a lot of people are starting to line up there, and they're like, get out of the road. Everyone stay out of the road so the buses can come through. And then all of a sudden it's like, okay, now the buses are out of the way. Come on, everybody, get in the road. And then there's just this cluster that there was like hundreds of people in front of the start line that had to move back behind the start line. And
yeah,
of course, hundreds of people just standing right there. So it was just this gridlock that delayed the start by a good 12 minutes, I think.
It's always the last thing you want to do before a race is worry about someone else's problems.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And everyone, there was quite a bit of anxiety too, because the temperature at the start was like 54 degrees. So it felt fine then, but we knew that every minute it was delayed, it was just going to be a little warmer at the finish. So everyone is kind of anxious, but overall, I guess 12 minutes isn't really that big of a deal considering this was a sold out event, tons of people. I don't know the exact numbers, but it was a ton. Oh, but then though, when we finally do have everyone in, of course, the start line is going to be especially jam packed just because as soon as somebody crosses the start line, they're like, oh, okay, I'm in the corral. I'll stay here no matter how fast they are, by the way. Jam packed. And even more than a regular race, pre-COVID, I mean, I was at least touching three people the entire time I was finally in the corral ready to start the race.
You were not purposely touching them?
Oh, no, I was purposely handy with, and I was able to touch that many is what's strange. No, we were just jam-packed like sardines, and I think it'd be generous if there was 1% mask wearing in this, and it's like, huh. My, how quickly things change. What's it like in Ohio? Because Utah, it's like, it's over.
I get the sense everybody's done with it. Everybody's had it. I don't mean had it, but had enough of it. And for a good example is most places you're allowed to just go in without a mask if you're vaccinated on the honor system. I was in actually with Tim Hortons. And they did not take their signs down that says, so you did have to wear a mask. And I walked in and no one was wearing a mask, including employees. So at this point, it's over. We've moved on.
I let Costco be my moral compass. And once they were no longer requiring masks, it's kind of hard to.
For me, it was the liquor store. When the liquor store that I stop by once a week to pick up my premium beer and alcohol. I walked in and I had a mask and I looked over at my friends behind the counter and they had no masks. And I just almost like ceremoniously just tore off my mask and held it up in the air like, okay, we're done. We're done here.
Julian, so licked the door handle on the way out.
Freedom. Yeah. Well, yeah, I did a lot of things. Yeah. It was like a bra burning. Oh crap.
I think like I don't know, I have a cousin in LA. I'll have to ask him what it's like out there, but I think in New York it's still strange to see somebody without a mask. I don't know.
Yeah.
But in my particular neck of the woods, maybe a third of people are like still wearing masks in a grocery store or something like that. But this was down in Utah County. And masks were very few and far between.
But
I'm sure all these people are vaccinated, so nothing to worry about.
I was
going to
say, I wouldn't worry too much about the trained and ready to run a marathon crowd. There are some individuals that I like, you might put a mask. You know, if I had my druthers, you know, I'd be happy if they'd wear a mask. But the dude standing next to me that's just got done training for a marathon that still thinks he can do it. You're probably all right. I'm gonna give you the benefit of the doubt that you're not asymptomatic at this point.
Oh, this is something I wanted to talk to you about, and I forgot about till now. So, like, you know how when you get the vaccine, they say it like takes 2 weeks to kick in, or before you're considered fully vaccinated.
Yes,
this is completely my opinion here. Completely void of any research or logic. It's just, you know, my thoughts is, as a runner, don't you feel like yours kicks in sooner than that?
Yeah, I do.
I just feel like, my body is so efficient. It just
supercharged.
Takes me and it kind of just unshuffles that deck real quick and I'm ready to go. So I like 2 days after my second shot, I'm like, I'm probably fine now.
I got my shot. I went Johnson & Johnson's because, again, being a runner, I do what's the fastest. So that was the one shot option, and I was big into that. But I went with a friend of mine, Julian, a runner. Shout out to Julian. So we got our shots together. But you know, after the shot, they had us sit in this waiting area for 15 minutes to make sure that our limbs didn't fall off or something strange happens. And
the 15 minutes is so the computer chip syncs with the network.
That's what I wondered. But, you know, we sat there for maybe 5 minutes and we were just talking. And then we finally just looked at each other like, Like, what are we doing? Like, nothing's going to happen to us. We're fine with this. So we did. We just got up and walked out and
runners
got on with our lives.
And I'm sure it's just real athletes, and I bet weightlifters feel the same way, that we just have this cloak of resilience and like
exactly, yeah,
and can handle things better than the layperson.
So in that case, I got 10 more minutes of living that I wouldn't have gotten.
Because, like, you know, I think a virus doesn't care. I mean, your recovery may be different and stuff, but I don't think a virus cares if you're a runner or weightlifter or anything. I don't know that actually helps an immune system as much as, you know, maybe your recovery will be better because you're fit and your body will bounce back faster. But in my mind, I did still think that, my body's going to know what to do with these drugs real fast, way faster than 2 weeks. I don't need 2 weeks. My
yes.
body can do 2 days.
Yeah, we're elite. We're elite when it comes to fighting things and accepting virus or accepting vaccines. We're in tune with that sort of thing. Yeah, that's a fair analysis.
Okay, Steve, I think that wraps up Utah Valley. I'm glad I did it. It's still kind of baffling. I don't know why. I'm too old for this. I can't do this anymore. These close together marathons. I think I'm going to need at least a few months instead of a few weeks between races. I'm 34 now, not getting any younger. So I'm not going to do these 6 weeks apart anymore. Although I can't imagine waiting till June to do a race, a marathon that is. I need that.
I should throw out there, Charlie, I'm 34. I think I began running when I was around 34. So that I reject some of your I'm not getting any younger. You are. I'm not getting any younger, but there's
well, nobody's
there's
getting
many
any younger.
Years.
Yes. But. Yeah, I realize. Like, Steve, you're the ageless wonder. Okay, we all know that. the way you turn back the clock. I mean, it's incredible. But we can't all be you. All right. And I started running at 24. As opposed to 34. So when I was in my mid to late 20s, I did rapid back-to-back races all the time and with little repercussion. And already at 34, I'm finding that that's becoming more difficult to do. And or maybe it's just the general lack of sleep and the fact that I can't just, you know, lay out by a pool the rest of the day and drink beer after a race. Instead, I'm like chasing a toddler around. So that might be part of it that I can't do these back-to-back races. Yeah. I thought about that because my wife had some things to do yesterday. So I had to watch the little boy and that's tough to do post race. Sometimes it's tough to do even when you don't run at all that day, but after 26.2 downhill miles, it was a lot keeping up with him. And I was just trying to think, had I done this race in the past or if he wasn't in the picture, what this day would look like. And it would definitely not be me, you know, chasing him around. It would have been me with my feet up, sitting by a pool. Definitely several beers would have been involved as well.
I guess it's funny to think about. This sounds like a show idea where we talk about post marathon memories, but I've had marathons where I don't think I would have been okay to drive home. You know, I mean, it would be the equivalent of a DUI. I was just so just torn up but I've gotten
lucky.
That was
me after Glass City. That was me after Glass City. Cause I showed up at your house after the race. You saw what kind of condition I was in. And
well,
then
you were in no hurry to open it.
Gave me those pancakes and I drank that beer and then I felt better for a moment and then it all went downhill again from there. But I was, my mom had to drive me around that day. It felt terrible.
But every time I've ever driven myself to a marathon, I've been done okay. And I don't know if that's in the back of my mind that I still have to drive home, but
that probably forces you to be a little bit more disciplined.
It does. Yeah. Huh. Something to think about. Great. Yeah.
Oh, I have one other thing for Utah Valley. This just a little thing that happened. So the hotel was right like two blocks away from the finish line, which was perfect. So my wife and son could come down at mile 26, which, by the way, that is the toughest mile possible to tell somebody when to come see you, right? So I had to give them a half hour window of like, be there at this time. You'll be waiting anywhere from 1 to 30 minutes, depending on what happens here. So that was tough. And then with the delay, the 12-minute delay, thank God I didn't blow up. Otherwise, they may have been very concerned. But anyway, I didn't blow up, so I was like looking for them at mile 26. I had a pretty good idea of where they would be, and I like to blow my family a kiss, blow my wife a kiss as I'm coming down the finishing chute. So I was looking for my wife and my son, ready to blow this kiss, and I hear, "Charlie," and I look, and it's my friend Madeline, who I've run with dozens of times, and she's just a friend. So I see her, I smile, and I blow her a kiss.
Well, you were in that mode.
Yeah, I had one in the chamber, a kiss to be blown, and she said my name, and she was there. And in spite of the pain and the delirium of being at mile 26 in a marathon where you're just holding it together as best you can, in my mind I was like, well, that was mildly inappropriate.
That's funny. That does remind me of the last marathon I've done that we've talked to death, but you remember we finished in an area where, you know, friends and family weren't allowed, so it was all finishers, right, at that point, you know. And I'm so used to seeing, you know, my wife or kids or sometimes both, or so I, you know, I'm getting a little, you know, misty and feeling like, you know, that feeling of love for the world that you finished a marathon. And suddenly I just see all my running buds that I've run with. And it was like, oh, hey guys, you know, it was like, you suddenly switch modes. Like, hey bros, you know, we're done here, man. Look what I just did.
But oh, yeah, you go from like, I love you so much, to,
you know, hey, yeah, that kind of went out the window, that soft, fuzzy feeling. And it's like, hey, guys, what's up? You know, yeah.
Do you get choked up at all when you see your loved ones towards the end of a race? Because I always do. I can't help it. I think that everything is just so frayed at that point, like, yeah, emotionally, mentally, that like I see my wife and son and I'm just like, I love you guys so much. Like, I just like had to fight back the tears. And then that, well, like goes away as soon as I cross the finish line, is just like, God, I'm tired. But,
funny enough, that's kind of what I was going through. I mean, I was almost kind of getting teary-eyed until I realized, like, you know, they're not going to be here. This is all people that have finished. And the first thing I do is I see my group of running guys, and I'm like, I can't do that here. I can't break down in front of these guys. I mean, I'll never hear the end of it.
Around other men, never.
No. So I just sort of had to be like, hey, yeah, that was cool.
You guys want to go some beer?
Want to go get shit faced? Yeah, as I grab a beer. But yeah, that was moods aren't moods. You are a little afraid. That's the good way of putting it.
Yeah, I reached out to Madeline. She was fine with me blowing her the kiss. She didn't even notice, and she said, oh, "Don't worry about it." Thank you. Yeah,
it was, nothing weird. Nothing weird. Yeah.
Okay, one other thing I wanted to talk about, Steve, put an article on the Facebook page. We are. You should follow us on Facebook at Running Buds Podcast, but it's about Boston and how the article was just about how it's a shame, basically, that you can run a Boston qualifier and not run Boston Marathon if you so choose. The cutoff for this fall version of the race was what, almost 8 minutes?
It was 7 minutes and 47 seconds, Charlie.
Which is incredible.
Yeah, that wiped out every Boston qualifier I've ever had. Oh, so if it was always 7:47, I would never. But would have saved me a lot of money and pain.
Yeah, yeah, and it's just brutal. Like, that is so fast. I mean, Boston, especially since they moved everything up 5 minutes, starting at 3 hours for the young guys, 3.5 hours for the youngest women.
Yeah.
That is like a pretty small percentage of those that run a marathon can run that fast. So it's already this kind of elusive thing that it's such a difficult benchmark.
Right. Oh, now, do we have to qualify 2021 a little bit, because there's a lot of
a bigger window, right?
We have deferrals. We have a smaller field in 2021. So there is a lot more pressure on 2021 than theoretically there is in 2022 or there was in 2019.
And it also had the bigger window, right? You had, I mean, there weren't a lot of races, but there was still, what was there, like 2 years worth of?
Did I misspeak? There's not really deferrals, but yeah, you're right. There's a bigger window.
Yeah, no deferrals, but right. But the thing that really, really annoyed me about what this article brought to light for me is that I knew there was a lot of charity runners and a lot of sponsorships. Like, I think each city along the course gets so many like bibs that they're able to do with as they please. All the sponsors have so many, and then you can raise money for charity to run. These are ways for non-qualifiers to get in. I knew that these bibs existed, but this article identified 20% of the field is not qualifiers.
I just got to throw this, Charlie. I mean, I have such respect for you that, I mean, I do enjoy that you have this disdain for charity runners, and I'm with you.
I hate all of them. I don't actually. You know how much they have to raise this year to run 2021? You know what the starting point is? Throw out a number.
Let's go with they have to raise $5,000.
You are two thirds of the way there.
Oh, how do you raise $15,000 on your own?
Bad math, dude. Bad math. I said you're two thirds. You're two thirds of the way there.
Yeah, I can do math when it comes to time splits and that sort of thing. Two thirds, yes.
$7,500.
$7,500.
It's no 15 grand, but it's a lot.
$15,000 on your own. So, wow, that's a lot of money.
That's a lot of cheddar, and I know it's that amount. Uh-oh. Oh, boy. Hold on. See if the reinforcements are coming. Okay, I think we're good. Maybe. All right, I got to go check on him. We'll come back right back. Okay, things are calmer now. At least less audible, I think.
we are living our lives as we do these podcasts. It's funny, Charlie. You're dealing with that. I am broadcasting from a beautiful scenery. Well, not beautiful, but I'm outside. I've got a nice warm day. I have a beer. I have my feet up. I'm relaxed.
That is totally different. I am hunched up in my bedroom with my phone on the nightstand, trying to be as far away from my own child as possible. He heard what I said about charities in Boston, and he is quite aggrieved. But yeah, still 20% of the field.
So charity. You are not wrong. You are not wrong. But let me just throw out there: this is Boston can make whatever rules they want, and we have to live with it. We are at their mercy. We race at their pleasure.
No, I'm going to go ahead and disagree with you.
All right, let's
see. Boston.
They do not get to make their own rules, is what you're going to argue this.
Correct. The Boston Athletic Association is merely the vehicle for what runners have decided is the granddaddy of them all. Boston is the place. This is where it's going to happen. But how it happens, what makes it special is the runners, not the Boston Athletic Association. And I think they've gotten way too much into bed with the corporate sponsors and the charities, which is tremendous work. Of course, nobody, I do, who is going to be against, you know, literally tens of millions of dollars being raised for good causes?
That's you wonderful. Are.
Yeah, true. Me. I'm the guy against that. But at the same time, can we can we just have charity is fine. Subscribe to mine. You've got to pick a bucket or two. Sorry. Charity is wonderful, but let's have its time and place for it. Is one play is a lot of places. Let's have a race that is truly for the runners, by the runners, that they can really have this difficult but attainable goal. And when they hit that goal, they know they get to celebrate in this marathon. And I'm really disappointed that that these other things have gotten in the way of that.
So you believe in a purity to the marathon.
Right now, I realize I'm a man yelling at the clouds. Whenever there's a chance to make a lot of money, people will, and what's right or wrong rarely matters. You don't get in between a business and its way of making money. So I know it's not going to change. I'm just, you know, sad that it's not what it used to be, or what in my mind ideally it should be.
Well, fair enough. You're arguing for a more pure race for the running part of it. The runners.
I'm an idealist, Steve.
Yes. Oh, okay. I see where you're coming from, and I mean I agree with you in spirit. And yeah, I can honestly do without the charity runners myself, but it is one of those things. It's their race. We just have to play by their rules. And if we're not making, I will say, Charlie, while I agree with you, I do get annoyed that people believe they have a right just because they qualify. It means more than they really just get to register. So you do have a degree of people thinking they should be able to race just because they qualified, which only allows you to register. It doesn't allow you to do the race.
Isn't that what the entire conversation here? And I'm saying that they should, that should be it. That should
qualification. It allows you to register. It doesn't allow you to race, and you can still race. You just can't race Boston. You just go do something else. But there isn't this right to do Boston just because you qualify for Boston. It even says on the website, qualification only guarantees you the right to register.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's just the reality. But what I'm saying is qualification should guarantee you the ability to race, not just register. And I don't know what they got to do. 20%,
it would be nice.
That's ridiculously high. One out of every five people, that's how quick I can do math, are lining up without qualifying. And that's not even true. I actually donated to somebody running for charity.
Part of the problem.
It's former guest Morgan. He's Morgan Scoville. He's the principal, or I don't think that's his actual title, but he's essentially the principal that ran down the hit and run guy.
Yeah, headmaster.
Yeah, headmaster. There we go.
he can qualify on his own. I've seen that dude's times.
Yeah, he qualified. He just didn't qualify by enough. So that justified my 25 bones towards his $7,500 effort.
Morgan.
Yeah, so he's done like, I don't know, like a dozen in a row or something. That guy can't stop doing Boston. But yeah, 20% is just too many. It's too many. And
I liked it if it wasn't.
A way to make the field bigger. Like, what is the bottleneck that it can't be a 50,000 person event? If it's, if it's because the streets just can't have that many, do we have to just do more delayed waves? I that's fine. I don't care. Well, what about this? And this may sound sacrilegious, Steve. What if they had to alter the course a bit, but they could add another 5,000 runners? Would you be okay with that?
Wow. There's a question. No, I would not be okay with that. I'm more into the tradition of Boston than I am the need to add more people just to make some happy.
And I'm into the tradition of the runners running the event. That's what I'm into.
Okay, well, they can Like I said, everybody can do a marathon. They don't have to do Boston. Boston, we have a right to do Boston.
The virtual race. That's the same.
Okay. Charity runners should be allowed to do the virtual race. Now we are in agreement, correct? Do we agree on that?
Sure. Yeah.
So let's take it down to if you raise $2,000, you can do the virtual race anywhere and you get a medal. Yeah, with a little asterisk on it.
You know what? I sent you something. I don't remember this individual's name. They're just a member of this Facebook running group I'm on called Run for Fun.
It's
a Utah-based running group. And I sent this to you a long time ago. This was months ago. But when they announced basically like anybody could do the Boston Virtual, somebody had this just like completely unapologetic, I love running. I love doing marathons. I've tried. I've never been able to get into Boston, but it's always been a dream of mine. This is the closest I'm ever going to get, and I am going to do it, and I'm so excited. I'm finally going to get a Boston Marathon medal. And they were just so, whenever somebody's that like unapologetic, screw the haters, this is making me happy. I really respect it, even if I don't necessarily agree. So I sent that to you. I'm like, this is actually pretty cool that they're just admitting that, you know, whatever.
If you have the ability to redefine reality to what you want that effectively, then God bless you. Because...
What a backhanded
because you can argue that the sky is green, and if you get me to nod in agreement, fine, congratulations, but the sky, it doesn't make the sky green just because you made a good argument. The sky's still going to be blue.
So do you feel like the metal is cheapened?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, we've already talked about how they already sell the jacket and TJ Maxx after the race. So, but the medal did have some integrity that's now diminished. I hope they make the medal a little different for the virtual. Is it like the same exact medal as those that actually won the race?
I don't know. I'm wearing my virtual medal now. It's invisible. And it's huge. It's twice the size of yours.
I'm looking at my belly and enjoying my virtual six pack.
Oh my, where have we gone?
We've got to wrap this up. This is just getting silly at this point. I'm going to pick this up.
How do you reach us, Charlie? We're on Twitter.
We are?
Aren't we on Twitter? Are we on the tweets? Do we do the tweet?
Running Buds Podcast on Twitter, at Running Buds Podcast on Strava.
Oh, yeah, Strava. I remember
forgetting about that. Group. And email us. BudsRunning, also, oh God, I keep saying the old email address. It works, budsrunning@gmail.com. Or you can do runningbudspodcast@gmail.com. And I think that's it. Oh, and then, of course, Facebook, at Running Buds Podcast. That's a good way to follow us. We post some funny stuff, some articles, et cetera. It's a good way to for us to engage. So please do that. But my song this week it has a little bit of significance. I had the song Beating Heart Baby by, oh my God, what's the name of that band? Head Automatica, not very well-known band. And their biggest hit was Beating Heart Baby, which is kind of an upbeat, a little bit of a alternative rock song from the 2000s. And this was stuck in my head throughout the race. And it wasn't until after the race that I realized why Beating Heart Baby was kind of stuck in my head. And it's because my wife came home from her appointment and said that the new baby has a great heartbeat.
Wow. And well, congratulations on that.
Yeah. I was hoping you were paying attention that you would catch the reference, but yes, number two is due in December.
Wow. That's huge news. This is a way to bury the lead, Charlie, to the end of the episode.
Yeah. Going to have another one while my first one is still screaming his head off. And my wife just texts me, it's like he won't even let me near him. I don't know what's wrong. He won't let me touch him. Oh, great.
So he's not even a teen yet. That's so cute.
We're going to double that and do in December 9th.
Yeah. Wait till they gang up on you, Charlie.
I'm ready for it, I think. Maybe. St. George this fall is going to have even more emphasis because I can't imagine I'm going to be able to do the same intensity of running when this gets doubled. So I think, I'm going to start doing ultras now since, I can't run fast.
Yeah, you may as well. It gets you out of the house for days at a time. Train to race. Yeah. 100-mile race. Hey, hon, I'm doing 100 miles tomorrow. I'll see you on Thursday.
You'll start getting double cheeseburgers again. Okay. We are the Running Bud. Head Automatica is going to close this one out. All of our music can be found on Spotify. If you look up Running Bud's episode music, all the songs we close the episodes with are there. Until next time, see you guys.
See you, Dad. Running Buds.